Hi all. Thank you all very much for coming. This is a talk about a cryptographic sculpture called Kryptos, which is at the center of CIA headquarters, and a related cipher called the Cyrillic Projector. How many people have been, my name is Ilanka Dunnan, how many people have been to one of my talks before? Okay. And how many people have studied the Kryptos sculpture or worked on the code at all? Want to see? Come on. All right.
I've heard about it once.
Okay, all right. And how many people here have read a book called The Da Vinci Code? Okay. All of these things are all linked together, and I'll go into all of them. And anybody who doesn't know anything about cryptography, don't worry, because I will be targeting this towards a talk that anybody can understand. So a little bit about me. I am a professional game developer. That is my day job. And I also have a hobby in cryptography. And that hobby actually started here through DragonCon, because I was here several years ago and I was just speaking about online games, which is my field, and in this track, the Electronic Frontiers track. And other people, as you probably know, that also come to speak in the track are the hackers. Like the 2600 groups will come in and they'll talk about computer security and how to protect your computer from other hackers. And so I'd kind of meet the other speakers in this track because of, you know, we'd hang out, have a beer at the end of the day. And through them, I heard about this code called the Freaknik 3 code. This was a code challenge that had been released at a hacker convention in Nashville. It was a challenge to the attendees at the Freaknik convention with a prize offered to the first person who could crack the code. Well, it had been a year and no one had cracked the code yet. And I heard about it here at DragonCon, as I said, over a few beers. And then after DragonCon, I decided to take a look at the code. And I just got totally obsessed with it. And it took me about a week and a half, 10 days, but I cracked the code. And I won a free trip to a HackerCon, and you know, free t-shirts and free hotel and free drinks. Not that it's hard to get free drinks at a HackerCon. And then I went around cracking a bunch of other codes. As a matter of fact, I cracked so many codes that at the AtlantaCon convention, when they released their code on a sheet of paper, at the bottom of the paper it said, "Note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantaCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka." So I just kept, and of course I cracked that one too, and then the guy who wrote it, Johnny X, posted rude comments about me on a little light board down in the lobby of the convention. And then September 11th happened, and I decided to see if I could volunteer to help out with the war on terrorism with my skills in cryptography that I'd gained. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So what this talk is going to be about, I'm going to talk about this sculpture at CIA headquarters, Kryptos, and a sister sculpture by the same artist called the Cyrillic Projector. And I'll also talk about how Kryptos is starting to really become a phenomenon over the last few years. It used to be that I'd maybe talk to a few people a year about Kryptos, and now I have a website about it, and I've just passed over 1 million page views to my website, so it's just becoming huge. 1.2 million today, I think. I'm in the games industry. I've been involved with computers forever. My father was involved in computers back when they were these things that filled up an entire room with lots of flashing lights, and he'd take me into work with him, and I'd be a little kid playing with the key punch machines to make those key punch cards, because I thought it was really cool, because when they punch out the hole in the card, you get this neat confetti that collects down underneath the machine, and so that was really fun for a little kid. And I've been a speaker at several conventions now, several hacker cons and also other fan cons. Cracked a bunch of codes. And after September 11th, another one of the things that I did is I organized a crisis center at my company, because since we have internet games, many of our customers log on from all over the world. And many of our customers were in New York and Washington, D.C. And so we had many of our players saying, well, what happened to so-and-so? What happened to so-and-so? And so I organized a huge crisis center database at our company so people could write into a special email address. And then I went around tracking down the status of every single one of our customers that I knew about that was in the affected areas. And as part of that, I uncovered a hoax, which is one of my ex-customers did something really scummy after September 11th, which is that he used September 11th as an opportunity to declare himself dead, and then was going around online pretending to be his own widow and really traumatizing a lot of people. And I was the one that figured that out and tracked him down and got him to post a formal confession of what he did, of what he'd done, and then a formal apology to the community about what he'd done. And that got written up in several articles. I'll have links to that here. And then I put together a team that cracked the Cyrillic Projector cipher. I'll be talking about that in detail. And along the way, people, when I'd give talks, people would say, well, like, how famous is Kryptos? How famous is the Cyrillic projector? And I'd go around looking online for a website that had a list of famous unsolved codes, and there really wasn't one, so I made a list of famous unsolved codes. I wrote to cryptographers all over the world, and we kind of collaborated on it. And that website is just hugely popular, and I get thousands and thousands of hits from all over the blogosphere. It'll kind of get popular in different circles, like all of a sudden I'll be tracking the hits and I'll get all these links coming in from Holland or something, all these Dutch web pages, and it's because something in the Dutch blogosphere, somebody posted about my page, or I'll get all these links from Japan and I can't even read what it is they're writing, but all these different links, all these different pages are linking to me. So this is the Freaknik 3 code. This is the one that started all the fuss. Again, I found out about it just because it was a flyer on one of the tables in the back of this track at Dragon Con. And I've got another talk where I go into detail about how it comes apart. It's sort of like an onion, and you have to peel all the different layers of it. And then after I cracked the Freaknik code, I wrote a tutorial about how I'd done it. And I posted it on a web page, and so it's a fun read if you like kind of humorous cyberpunk. I've got lots and lots of in jokes and puzzles and hidden things all through there with references to everything from The Matrix to Monty Python and Illuminatus. And every so often I get people even IMing me all the time saying, "Well, I found this and I found that." And I'm like, "Okay, you're getting along there, but there's still things in there that haven't been found." So well, maybe someday somebody will make a full list of everything that's hidden in there. And through the Freaknik 3 code, there were various dead ends in it. And one of the dead ends in the Freaknik code was, okay, you've solved this section, now go solve this. And it was a link to the CIA's crypto sculpture. This was the first place I heard about it. This is a sculpture about 12 feet tall and about 20 feet long or so, a curved copper scroll. It's got letters punched through it. So you're actually looking through the sculpture and you're seeing the other side of it. There's four codes that we know of that are on the sculpture. Three of the codes we've solved, we know what they say, and I'll go into the details on those. And there's a fourth section at the very, very bottom on the left-hand side there. It's 97 or 98 characters long, and we don't know what it says. And it's one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world, with thousands and thousands of people taking a look at it. Some of them, it's really consuming their entire lives. We're working on cracking it, and I'll tell you what's known about it. It was commissioned in 1988 when the CIA commissioned their new headquarters building, and then it was dedicated in 1990. The sculptor was a man named James Sanborn, who's still living. He's 60 years old this year. He lives in Washington, D.C., and he's done other sculptures since then that also have codes on them. And he had never done a code sculpture before he did Kryptos, but he was taught about codes. After he got the commission, he decided he wanted to do a sculpture based on codes. And so he was paired up with a man from the CIA, an ex-CIA operative named Ed Scheidt, who was in the process of retiring. And Ed taught Sanborn about codes, and Sanborn took that and ran with it. It's a big debate as to how much the code was designed by Scheidt and how much it was designed by Sanborn. Did Scheidt like make worksheets and then Sanborn worked from those worksheets? Or did Scheidt kind of just teach Sanborn general code systems and then Sanborn kind of made something up on his own? Because it's been so long and it hasn't been cracked yet, we really don't know. Sanborn may have put in some twists or he may have done something really hard. We're not really sure. Now, I wanted to see the sculpture, and it's hard to get into it. It's in the center of CIA headquarters. There's a funny story, which is after September 11th, I actually had a cousin who had a very close call on September 11th. He occasionally speaks at the Pentagon, and he was on his way the morning of September 11th to the Pentagon to give a briefing, and he was actually having printer problems, and so he was running a little late. But he got the printer problems resolved, and then he started heading to the Pentagon, and then he checked his cell phone messages, and his cell phone actually crashed because there were so many messages from people saying, a plane just hit the Pentagon, don't go. And the plane actually hit right where he was going to be, and some of the people he was supposed to brief were killed. So after September 11th, a month or two after, I went to Washington, D.C. to see my cousin and to hug him and say I was glad he was okay. And we went to the Pentagon and we went to the memorial there. And then we're kind of driving around Washington, D.C. And he says, well, as long as you're in town, there's a lot of different things to see here. Is there anything else you'd like to see? And I thought about it. And I thought, I've solved that Freaknik code. And through the Freaknik code, I heard about this sculpture called Kryptos. And I haven't really looked at it, but I'm kind of curious about it. Why don't we drive over and take a look at Kryptos? And he said, okay, well, where is it? And I'm like, I think it's in CIA headquarters. And he says, okay, well, that's in Langley, Virginia. Where in Langley? And I'm like, I don't know where CIA is. And we went back to his house. We logged on and kind of surfed around. And we found out that CIA is not that easy to find. There's no street address for CIA headquarters. And if you want to apply for a job, there's just like a post office box that you're supposed to write to. And I'm like, okay, this is a challenge. What can I do here? And so I knew that CIA was in Langley. And I sort of knew what the building looked like, because I've seen in Tom Clancy movies, they say, you know, CIA setup. And there's a setup shot where it's like looking down and you sort of see the outline of the building. And I'm like, okay, I know what the building looks like. I know it's in Langley. So I went and I downloaded a bunch of satellite reconnaissance pictures of the entire Langley, Virginia area. And I went around and I looked around until I found it. And then I cross-referenced it against other maps where there's this big blank area on the map, you know. And so I told my cousin, okay, that's where it is. And so we drove by there, and we figured that we'd, you know, once you get there, there is actually a sign on the highway saying next exit, CIA headquarters. And so we took the exit. We figured we'd like drive along the service road, you know, kind of scope things out. But that particular exit, when you take that exit, there's no service road. It's like you take the exit and you're there, and there's this huge gate, and there's barbed wire across the top, and there's guard shack, and all these big guys with guns come pouring out of the guard shack. And they're asking a very reasonable question, you know, right after September 11th, who are you and why are you here? And so I said, oh, well, I just want to see the crypto sculpture. And they go, oh, CIA, crypto, sorry, you can't get in. It's official business only. So I'm thinking, okay, can I talk my way into CIA headquarters? So I'm thinking, okay, well, is there like an official public tour day? And they said, nope, sorry, official business only. And I'm like, can I get an invitation from my congressman? Go in. And they say, nope, sorry, official business only. And I'm like, well, is there, maybe I could, you know, if I knew someone, and is there like a family tour day? And they say, nope, official business only. And I'm running through all my different questions. And remember, these are big guys with guns, you know, pointing at me. And I mean, they weren't pointing the guns at me, but they were very polite, but they were very firm, and they did have guns. And so I couldn't get in, but we drove around. I'm thinking, official business only. Now, another track that I had going here was also after September 11th, like I said, I was wondering if maybe I could help out with the war on terrorism. So I'd called up the local FBI in my city, which is St. Louis, and I said, hey, September 11th, war on terrorism, good citizen, I'd love to help. Is there anything I can do to help? And they said no. So I called back the next week, and I said, is there anything I can do to help? And they said no. And I kept calling back and trying to find out some way that I could get in there and just do anything that I could, because I was as infuriated as everybody else by what had happened. And finally I got an FBI agent who said, well, what is it that you know about? And I listed off all the different kinds of codes that I'd cracked and the different kinds of cryptographic systems. And one of the ones that I mentioned was something called steganography. And he said, you know, we've been hearing rumors that Al-Qaeda might have been using steganography as a way of creating messages and planning the September 11th attack. Now, steganography, what it is a way that you can take a picture on the web and you can hide some sort of a message inside of the picture. And there had been all these rumors going around. And he said, the FBI agent said, well, we know that there's like big brains in Washington, D.C. that know all about cryptography and steganography, but we're here in St. Louis field office. We have a different mission, and we don't really know about this. Could you maybe put together a talk about it and come to one of our meetings and just tell us a little bit about what steganography is, what kinds of things that we should be looking for if we're going to be looking? So they kind of figured that I was maybe going to put together a 10 or a 15-minute talk, and I went all out. I made like an 80-slide PowerPoint presentation. And I researched everything I knew about steganography and Al-Qaeda codes. Now, I don't believe that Al-Qaeda was using steganography, so what I started doing was tracking down the rumors about where the rumors started about steganography, and I put that into the talk as well. And I got invited, and I ended up giving the talk to representatives from the FBI and the Secret Service and postal inspectors and customs agents and assistant U.S. attorney. And then I started getting invited to all sorts of other places to give this talk as well, and you know, different sci-fi cons and different universities. And I'm thinking, official business. Maybe I can use this talk as my way of getting into CIA. But now, how do I get an invite to CIA? So what I did is, when I was giving the talk, and I would demonstrate hiding something inside of a picture. Well, the picture that I used was a picture that I had downloaded from the CIA website. And it didn't have anything hidden in it when I downloaded it, but then I hid something inside the picture, and then I put that in my talk saying, here's an example, just a demonstration. And this is a picture of the crypto sculpture at CIA headquarters, and boy, I would love to give this talk at CIA someday. Okay, it wasn't me, I promise. Okay. So every time I gave the talk, and I would say, hey, I would really love to give this talk at CIA. Well, one of the places I gave the talk was at this huge hacker convention in Las Vegas called DEF CON. Ooh. And this is hackers coming in from all over the world. It's the biggest hacker convention in the world. And I gave the talk, and I'm in a huge roof tent. There's like 1,000 people, all these hackers, and maybe a few undercover agents as well. So I go through my talk, and I say, hey, you know, and here's my picture of Kryptos, and boy, I'd love to give this talk at CIA. Well, at the end of the talk, and everyone, there's people that come up, and they give you business cards and stuff, and one person came up, and they came up to the podium, and they leaned over the podium, and they said, I work at Langley. I think I can get you in. I'm like, cool. I don't want to be paid. All I want is my, you know, some time to look at the crypto sculpture. And so they gave me their name, their first name and a phone number. I didn't get anything else. And so at the end of the con, and I'm thinking, okay, now was this somebody who's really at CIA, or is this just a hacker who's pretending to be at CIA and is just pulling my chain? So I called up this person, and they said, we'd love for you to come speak at CIA. Can you send us a copy of your slides first? And I'm like, well, you have to prove to me that you really work at CIA. And they said, well, what do you want us to do? And I said, well, you need to send me an email from an official CIA email address. And they said, well, I don't have that. And I'm like, well, you better get one. So... So a few days later, I get an email from them from a .ucia.gov address, which is unclassified CIA.gov address. And then I wrote back to make sure that it was a real address, that it wasn't just a spoofed email. And we had two-way communications. Like, okay, maybe they really do work at CIA. So I send them a copy of my slides, and they said, okay, well, how much would you like to be paid for coming to speak at CIA? And I'm like, I don't want to be paid. All I want is some time to sit and look at the crypto sculpture. And they said, well, how much do you want to be paid? And I'm like, I don't want to be paid. I just want time. And we kept going back and forth on that. And I told them, fine, make me an offer. Whatever offer you say, I'm going to say yes. I'm not going to be haggling and negotiating. But they kept asking me how much I wanted. And I'm finally, I'm like, okay, you know, reimburse my airfare. I'm going to be staying with my cousin. I don't need hotel. You know, $500, really. But if that's too much, it's okay. Just make me an offer, and I'll say yes. But I don't want to be paid and not have time to see the crypto sculpture. They said, okay, we understand. So about a month later, I get a call from them. They say, okay, we want you to come speak, and yes, you're going to get your time to look at the sculpture, and we're going to pay you $2,500. I'm like, yes, okay. So that was my experience of negotiating with the government. I name a price. Yes.
How long since you had first gotten to Langley to look at or try to get in was that?
The question was, how long from the time I tried to get into Langley did I get in? I think it was about a year, a little over a year, because I gave the talk at DEF CON in July, which was about 8 or 9 months after the September 11th attacks, and then I got into Langley in October of that year. So that was October 2002. So it took a little while. So I got in, and they wouldn't let me take pictures of the sculpture while I was there. But they did let me take some rubbings of the sculpture while I was there. So these are just done on standard 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. Gives you an idea of the size of the letters that are in there. And after I got back to St. Louis, I had all these really cool rubbings, which is kind of a really cool souvenir. But I'm thinking, you know, there might be somebody else out there that might be really interested in these rubbings. So I added a little web page to my website. It was just one web page saying, here's the rubbings, and here are the observations that I made of Kryptos while I was there, and maybe these are going to be useful to somebody. And then I started getting these emails coming in, strange emails from all over the world from other people that were working on the crypto sculpture, because there really wasn't any Crypto Central at that point. And my website kind of became Crypto Central. And people would write to me and say, hey, I've solved part 4 of Kryptos. And I'm like, cool, what does it say? And they said, it's got my home address, and it's proof that they're really watching me. Okay. And can you show me the method? And can we get a third party to duplicate your system on that? And the majority of the letters I got were like that. But every so often, I'd get letters from somebody who was an honest-to-God cryptographer. And we'd have some interesting discussions, and we'd kind of write up papers about what we saw. And I'd get more and more correspondence. And I'd be doing my best to answer the questions that were coming in. And one of the questions that came in was, what other sculptures has James Sanborn done? So I contacted Sanborn's agent. I said, can you send me a list of everything Sanborn has ever done? And they said, well, there's no such list. I'm like, well, he's an artist, and I'm sure he shows at galleries. There must be lists of everything Sanborn's done. They said, no, he's done much too much stuff. It would be much too difficult to ever make a list of everything Sanborn has ever done. I'm like, okay, I'll make a list of everything that Sanborn has ever done. So I started making a web page about James Sanborn. And I started, what I'd started to do was write to art galleries all over the country. Any gallery that I'd ever heard of where Sanborn had shown work, I wrote to them, said, hi, I'm doing this research project. Can you send me what you've got? And they started sending me programs that had some lists of everything he'd done. And in the programs would be mentions of other places where he'd spoken or other places where he'd displayed art. And then I'd write to them. And stuff started piling up in my apartment. I started calling it Smithsonian West. And I was doing my best to put all this on my webpage, and eventually I got a phone call from Sanborn, who are you and why do you have a webpage about me? And I'm like, oh, wow, great, it's so cool to talk to you, and I have these other questions. And then he realized that I was giving him free promotion, and so we started communicating that way, and I'm like, great, maybe I can pump him for hints about the sculpture and adding stuff. And then another one of the guys that wrote to me, a man named Gary Warzen, he said, maybe we should start a discussion list about cryptos, and that's a central place for everyone to talk about the sculpture. And I said, sure, I think that's a great idea. And so he started it, and I went in, and he made me moderator, and then people just all over the world started joining our mailing list. And I think at last count, we've got 800 people that are members of this mailing list. And anyone here that wants to join the mailing list, come on in. I'll have instructions about how to join it later. This is part four of cryptos. This is at the very bottom of that section. And the question mark at the very beginning there is a big debate, because some people say it is part of part four and some people say it isn't. So that's why we say it's either 97 or 98 characters long. And I can't tell you what it says, because we don't know. You're going to hear me say, I don't know a lot. I'll tell you what we speculate, but we don't know for sure what it says. There's four panels of cryptos. Two of them are what's called a visionaire table. Visionaire is named after a French cryptographer named Blaise de Visionnaire, who made a really interesting cryptographic system a few hundred years ago. And for a while, it was considered to be the uncrackable cipher. But today, with modern computers, we can crack pretty much any visionaire cipher pretty rapidly, as long as we have enough ciphertext to work from. If we have a lot of ciphertext, we can crack it. If it's a small piece, it gets very difficult to crack, because we can't find those repeating patterns, which is what cracks a code open. Like the Enigma cipher from World War II. The way that Enigma was cracked is because there was just enormous amounts of data that the Germans were transmitting constantly, every day. And because we had these large amounts of data, we could look for a subtle pattern. They weren't using Visionaire, they were using a different system. But also, some of the things we did in World War II was we'd know that certain stations would be broadcasting certain things at certain times of day. For example, there'd be a weather station that every morning, very punctual, they'd be broadcasting a weather report every morning from the station. So if we captured a message from that station, it's sunny. Somewhere in this message, it's probably going to say sunny or windy or a temperature or something. And so little things like that can be used to crack open a message. But I'll go over the types of systems that were used on the crypto sculpture. The first person to crack the first three parts was internal to the CIA. It wasn't publicly announced at first. This was in 1998, a man named David Stein. And he did it on his own time. And he used just pencil and paper. And he kind of worked on it in bits and pieces on the weekends. And he figured it out. And it was distributed internally to CIA. But they didn't announce it to the outside world. And then in 1999, a man named Jim Galogli, who's a California man, a computer scientist, and the ex-head of the American Cryptogram Association, he cracked it using a computer attack. And that got all kinds of attention, newspapers all over the world. And that's when the CIA came forward and said, OK, well, we have someone that cracked it too, or cracked the first three parts last year. And then the NSA came forward and said, well, we have three people that cracked it too, but we're not going to tell you who, and we're not going to tell you when, which is very NSA. No matter what agency does something in DC, NSA wants to come forward and say, oh, yeah, well, we did that first, and we just didn't tell anybody. The joke in Washington, D.C. is that NSA stands for no such agency, right? Actually, it's National Security Agency is the actual. This is the artist, James Sanborn, and he has a very varied background. He was born in D.C. His father worked at the Library of Congress for many years. He studied at Oxford University in England. He studied archaeology, and he also studied architecture at one point. And the way he became an artist is that one of his projects for architecture class was he needed to build a scale model of a building. And while he was building it, he got so interested in that process that he decided that was what he wanted to do with his life instead of being an architect. And so he switched and became an artist, and he taught at a school on the East Coast for a while. And he was famous for being the oddball professor who lived under the swimming pool. There was this little utility room under the swimming pool with pipes and stuff, and that was where he lived. And no list of his works existed until I started making one. in 2003, and that's when I started talking to him. And while I was doing this research on him, one of the things I learned was that right after he'd made the crypto sculpture for CIA headquarters, he'd made another piece, which he called the Untitled Cryptos piece, which he sold to a private collector. And I went and tracked down the current location of it. It had passed through a few different hands. The collector had given it to a museum, and then it gave it to someone else, and then it was given to a private gallery. But the current location of it is at the home of an internet dot-com millionaire in California. And last year, I was in Los Angeles, and I was there for another trade show called E3, and I called this millionaire up, and I said, hey, you know, I'm Ilanka, and I do cryptos research. Can I come look at the sculpture? And he said, sure. He was very gracious about it. And I went and I got some close-up looks at it. And this is its current location. So it's you can see it's in a different format from the CI version of the sculpture. Now, it's got two sides on it. And the on one side, it repeats all the text that's on the CI version. On the other side, it's all encrypted Russian text. So, and on the English, the Roman Latin alphabet side, there's actually a few subtle differences between the text that on this sculpture and the text that's on the CIA version. One is that the order is a little bit different. Like on the crypto sculpture, if you had the codes in the order of 1, 2, 3, 4, on this piece, they're ordered 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, and then it stops suddenly partway through too. John Wilson, by the way, is a member of my group, and in some of the stuff he knows more than I do because he spends a lot of time researching it. So I kind of check, is that right, John? Yeah. There's also, when I got a chance to go up and take a close look at it, another thing that I noticed was that there are some dots that are on the sculpture. They're different from what's on the CIA version. And now the Russian side was also duplicated on another sculpture here, which is called the Cyrillic Projector. And this sculpture is currently at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte, and it was also made by Sanborn. And he used it as part of his art shows in the early 1990s, and then he sold it to the University of North Carolina. And so this sculpture has about 75% of the encrypted Russian text from the Untitled Cryptos piece. And so one of the theories is, well, maybe we need to crack this code, and maybe it'll give us hints about cracking that last section on the crypto sculpture at CIA. So, okay, and other differences on the Untitled Cryptos piece, let me see if I can get my mouse thing going here. Okay. So you can see that the ciphertext here starts with E-N-D-Y-A-H-R, and the endy line, and I'll show you later how that's different on the crypto sculpture. Also, this up here is the visionaire table, and this is just some nice diagonals, A, B, C, D, and this is part of a visionaire tableau. And then another difference was, this is probably about a foot off the ground on the Untitled Cryptos piece. When I got down and I just looked at it really hard, there are these two dots. These two dots do not appear anywhere on the CIA version of the sculpture. Now, why the dots are on this sculpture and they're not on the other one, we don't know. We have some speculations. It may be a hint. It may just be artistic license. Not sure. Yeah. So getting back to the dots, by the way, if they were on this sculpture, would probably be around here. Does that look about right, John?
It would be where the WW is.
Right. So, yeah, in the lower section of the top panel. All right. So on the tableau side, the crypto sculpture, we have these reference alphabets. You see it goes A to Z here, and then A to Z along the top, and then we have these reference spaces at top and bottom, which may or may not be important. And the rest of these is just nice diagonals going through. Now, the way that a visionaire table is built is, in this case, it's a two-keyword system. And the first keyword was the word cryptos. And the way you make a cipher alphabet is you take the letters of the alphabet, A through Z, then you remove the letters that make up the keyword. So you remove the letters K, R, Y, P, T, O, S, and then you leave the rest of the letters there. And I have a little animation here that was made by Gary Phillips, if I can get this thing to run. So you can see we're pulling out, and then you move them up to the front of the alphabet, and you leave everything else there. So you still have 26 letters. They're just in a different order. So that's how you make your first cipher alphabet. Right, you have to know the keyword. And then you take it, and then we're going to pile these up into a larger grid. And we're going to take a second keyword, and we're going to spell that keyword down the left-hand margin. In this case, our second keyword is the word palimpsest. A palimpsest is a word for a scroll that has had a message that was written on it, and then that message was scraped off, and then the scroll was reused. So sometimes you can see bits and pieces of the old message that are still on the scroll. So the first part of Kryptos, these top two lines, was encrypted with a double keyword system. So we have EMUFP and this YQT line. So those two lines. And what we have is the tableau here. So we have the crypto cipher alphabet that's realigned with the word palimpsest coming down the left margin here. So the EMUFPHZ is the ciphertext from the crypto sculpture. And you take each one of those letters, EMUFPHZ, and you put each one on a different line. So you have EMUFP. So from the E becomes a B, the M becomes an E, the U becomes a T, the F becomes a W, the P becomes an E. So EMUFPHZ becomes BETWEEN, between. And if you keep doing that all the way through, then you get the entire plain text message that comes out of it. There's the ciphertext using the keywords of cryptos and palimpsest. Comes out to the plain text of between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of occlusion or illusion. There's no such word as occlusion. It's a typo. It's a spelling error. However, when I asked Sanborn about it, I said, was that just a screw-up? He said, no, it's deliberate, but it's not what it is that's so important. It's where it is. It's the orientation or the positioning. And then he just kind of smiles cryptically, and you don't know. Right. And this particular spelling is, John, this is on the untitled piece?
Yes.
Yes. And but there's another spelling error that is not on the untitled piece. No. All right, now we're going to part two, which starts at line three here, VFPJ. And part two goes all the way down to the bottom of this plate. And it also uses a double keyword visioneer system. In this case, the two keywords were cryptos and abscissa. And it comes out to say, it was totally invisible. How's that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field, X. The information was gathered and transmitted underground. We have another typo there, to an unknown location. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. X. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message. X. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. ID by rows. Or maybe ID by row S. We're guessing as to the punctuation on this. And the word breaks. Now the word underground on the fourth line there is misspelled. Now this misspelling is not on the untitled Kryptos piece, but we don't know why. But when I asked Sanborn about this error, he said that this too was a deliberate error, but that it wasn't what it was where it is, its orientation or its positioning. The question about only WW, we had a lot of speculation for a long time about what WW meant, but Sanborn finally did confirm it. WW stands for William Webster. He was the director of the CIA at the time that the sculpture was installed. Now, the latitude and longitude coordinates here point to the general location of CIA headquarters. Anyone here who's played with the GPS or done any kind of geocaching, specific thing here is where it says 6.5 seconds north. So anyone that's played with the GPS, you know that a tenth of a second of latitude is a very specific location about 10 feet across. And so there was some speculation that these coordinates pointed to the crypto sculpture, but they don't. They point to an area about 150 feet southeast of the sculpture in the central courtyard. Now, we've sent people to look at that location, and they say there's nothing there. There's not anything engraved. There are manhole covers that are scattered around the courtyard. There's none at that particular location, but it might mean that there's something underground. Also, underneath the courtyard there, it's not like utility tunnels. Evidently, there's office space that's underneath the CIA. So it's possible that there's an office and there's something in ceiling tiles. We don't know. I have some people from CIA who contact me and say, can I help? And so they'll go and they'll look at different sections, but there's a limit to how much they can do. I mean, they can't like go into somebody else's office and start removing ceiling tiles, because they're not going to be working at CIA for very long after that. But if there is anyone here in the room who has information that wants to share it, I promise I'll be just discreet about it, or anyone that's listening to the audio recording after it goes up on the web. We really need some more people on the inside who are willing to kind of just look around and even just give us observations. For example, there's a compass rose that Sanborn left on a granite slab near the sculpture. And we'd love to know exactly which direction that the compass rose points, but no one has been able to give us exact readings on that yet. I mean, I think that's one of the main reasons that the part four has not been solved yet, is that we can't get in to really look at it. I'm supposed to be like one of the world's number one experts of the sculpture, and I've only seen the thing once. So very, very difficult to get info. Now here's a theory about the wording of this part one: between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of occlusion. We were wondering if that was like a line from a poem or a story somewhere, but it's not. Sanborn has confirmed that it's an original sentence that he wrote. And he said it's an original sentence with carefully chosen wording. So it's possible that that sentence is a hint for the key word of the next section, which is abscissa. Like subtle shading is SS, absence, ABS, light, you've got the symbol C, so abscissa. Someone else pointed out that the letters CIA are an abscissa, and other people have done some interesting things with anagrams. I'll talk about those a little further down. So this is part three, and it starts here. Here's the ENDY line. Remember, I was pointing out ENDYAHR. So this is where the untitled cryptos piece starts. But notice that we've got some letters that are out of alignment. That's another difference between the two sculptures. Now, part three starts here with the E, and it goes down to about here or so. And this is the ciphertext for part three. Now, some people who've played with codes or puzzles a little bit can look at the ciphertext and just notice that it looks a little bit different from the ciphertext for parts one and two. Does anybody notice anything different?
Lots of double
E's, lots of double
H's. Yeah, and that's exactly it. The letter frequency is a little bit different. For parts one and two, it was kind of a more random distribution of letters, all the letters in the alphabet. Here, the most common letter in this grouping is the letter E. You know, there's a lot of E's, there's a lot of T's, there's a lot of A's. So we're looking at the most commonly used letter in the English language is the letter E. The second most commonly used letter is T, so E-T-A-O-I-N, I think. So this is English. It's not a substitution cipher like the other sections. This is actually a transposition cipher. All the letters of the message are there, they're just scrambled up. So we need to figure out a way of unscrambling them. Now, when I was corresponding, one of the people that wrote to me when I first put up my webpage was Gary Warzen, and he's the one that started the Cryptos message group. And he actually just passed away quite recently, which we're all very sad about. But he was a very inspiring man. And one of the things that I was inspired about as I corresponded with him was I came up with a way of solving part three. It wasn't the first way that, I wasn't the first person to solve it, but I was the first person to kind of figure out this pencil and paper way of doing it, which is I took the letter, all the messages, all the letters of part three, and I put them into this grid here. And remember that first part that said ID by rows or ID by row S. And if you start with the S, and then you start counting down. So you go 1, 2, 3, wrap around 4, and there's an L. 1, 2, 3, 4, O, 1, 2, W, L, Y. So S, L, O, W, L, Y, slowly. And you keep doing that, and first of all, you get these wonderful clean diagonals. And any place you see a nice pattern like that, that's usually an indication that you're onto something. And if you keep doing that and you keep reading out all the diagonals, you can kind of zip out the entire message. So we get slowly, desperately. And then the entire plain text is slowly. Desperately slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. X. Can you see anything? Q. Okay, who recognizes this? Okay, yes, the man in the white shirt.
The guy opening up King Tut's tomb.
King Tut's tomb, yep, give the man a Cupid doll. Yeah, this is a paraphrased extract from the diary of Howard Carter on the day that he opened King Tut's tomb, November 26, 1922. And it's not a word-for-word copy of the diary. Another interesting thing is that Sanborn, we've looked at other sculptures that he's made with codes, and he has used this text on a couple other sculptures. However, he always uses slightly different wording. Why does he always use slightly different wording? Also, some people will notice where it says slowly, desperately, slowly. Desperately is misspelled. Okay. Now, when I asked Sanborn about this typo, I said, was this one deliberate too? And he looked at me and he just smiled and he said, it's possible, anything's possible. Which I take as Sanborn speak for it, well, maybe it's a real mistake. Somebody might have screwed up. Or it may be deliberate. But one of the other pieces that he made with this, it's not misspelled, it's spelled correctly. Another difference is where it says encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. In another one, he uses the lower part of the doorway were removed. So why are these little differences? We don't know. Why is there that X on the bottom line? We don't know. Can you see anything Q? Why is there a Q? We don't know. And the Q may stand for a question mark, and that question mark that's at the beginning of part four would come right at the end of this. So is that question mark indicating that it's part of part three? Or is it part of part four? We don't know.
Could it be that the X is like a paragraph marker because there were X's in the previous one that seemed to be like paragraphs?
Yeah, the question is, could the X be a paragraph marker? That's very possible. Also in part two, where it's, does Langley know about this? They should, it's buried out there somewhere. It sounds sort of like a disjointed radio transmission. So the X's might stand for the word over. Or be some sort of difference in the speaker. We don't know, but it's definitely one of the ideas that we're considering. You're welcome to join our group. Yeah. Also, some people have noticed that when Carter said, when he was asked, can you see anything, his answer was, yes, wonderful things, or yes, it is wonderful. So it's possible that that's a crib or a clue for part four, or it may just be more trivia that we have about the sculpture. Right. Right. John's pointing out that we've actually tracked down the original diary of Howard Carter. It's actually on display at the Oxford University, and we've seen transcripts of that diary. We're trying to see the actual pages, but it keeps being on loan to other universities, and I haven't tracked anyone down that can actually like Xerox the pages for us. But the text that's in the diary is different from the text of the book when Carter wrote his book about the opening of the tomb of Tutankhamun. So some of that might be, you know, poetic, dramatic license. Like his original diary said something like Lady E and Lord C were present. So that's like his shorthand meeting Lady Evelyn Carnarvon and Lord, I forget the first name of the other Lord.
Carnarvon.
Yeah. Lady Evelyn. Yeah. So. So, again, we've just been researching the heck out of this, all the different angles. So then we get down to part four, which we got that question mark. And again, I can't tell you what it says because we don't know. All right. Now, going on to the Russian sculpture, the Cyrillic projector. I'd heard about it in 2003, but I'd never seen it, and we didn't have a transcript of it. Of course, I was Googling and looking through search engines, but no one had made a transcript of it. We're sort of casually looking at it. And then a friend of mine from one of the hacker conventions and also from DragonCon named Randall Bullock, he drove through North Carolina and he took a bunch of pictures of the sculpture and he sent them to me and he said, okay, I hope these are helpful. I'm like, cool. And so I posted the pictures to my group. And I said, hey, let's get a transcript made of the sculpture. And a couple weeks went by, and nobody said anything. And I'm like, okay, I guess I have to make a transcript of the sculpture. So I spent weeks working from these photographs just spread all around me in my room. And remember, this is Russian. I'm transcribing Russian, and it's backwards on the sculpture. And I'm doing this piece of sculpture here and this piece of sculpture there. And I finally make this whole transcript. And I post it to the group, and I say, okay, here's a transcript of the projector, at which point two other people pop up in the group and say, oh, we made transcripts too. I'm like, great, thanks for telling me. But it was actually a good thing, because now we had three entirely independent transcripts, which we could compare to make sure that we had a really accurate transcript. So we kind of worked on it for a little bit and didn't really make any progress, because we're all working. We've got day jobs. We've got a lot of other things going on. No one had really figured anything out. So I said, okay, well, let's make it public. I'm going to post this on my webpage, and maybe somebody else out there can take a look at this transcript. Maybe they'll find something that we haven't. But I'm big about making things public. Also, some of you will notice that the word Medusa is here on the third line, which is some of these letters are not in the Cyrillic alphabet.
Actually, all of them are not. They're all in a different font.
Okay, a completely different font. Though I would argue that if there's an A in Medusa and an A here, that's a Cyrillic letter.
Okay.
So now a couple months later, somebody sends a message to my company's feedback form. And my website is play.net. I do computer games. And we have a way that customers can send in anonymous letters. And someone used that system to send a letter to customer service, and they said, please forward this to Ilanka. It's about the Cyrillic projector. So my customer service department, they get the letter, they okay, and they forward it along to me. And in this letter, someone said, I've solved the cryptographic portion of the cipher. It is, as advertised, not terribly difficult. P.S. I'm doing this anonymously because I have a sense of humor. Right? Now, they didn't say what the plain text was. They just said that they'd solved it. So I'm like kind of torn here. What do you do when you have someone who says they solved the code, but they haven't offered any proof that they've solved the code? And I went to Jim Galogli, who is the head of the American Cryptogram Association. I said, well, Jim, what do you do? And he said, well, this situation has actually come up in the past, and it's come up in some rather famous cases. And there is some debate about it, but the general consensus is that if you do not offer any proof that you've done something, you don't get credit for it. You have to publish. It's the scientific method. Something is not true unless it can be duplicated by a third party. And there's large cases of this. For example, with certain cryptographic systems, there was a system that was devised in a government lab, and it was used privately, and it was never published. And then some private individuals came up with the same system, and they got credit for it because they published about it, even though the government lab was the first, they were the first people to come up with it. And so I took Jim's advice, and I think I've got a slide here. So credit goes not to the first person who does something, but the first person who goes public about it, who can prove that they've done it by supplying enough information that the work can be independently verified and duplicated. And if it can't be duplicated, it's probably not real. So again, kind of go back to day job and everything. And then I'm reading my weblogs because I'm really interested to see who's linking to my webpage. And while I read my weblogs every day, and I was looking at my weblogs and I saw this interesting link I'd never seen before. This is somebody linking to me with a URL of cpsolution.htm. And I thought, wow, isn't that a really intriguing kind of a URL? So I go and I track this link back and I find this single webpage. And it's what looks to me like a Visionaire table using Russian. And there's no name on it, but there is a link to my page saying a transcription and photographs of the projector can be found through this link. I'm like, wow. And now my first thought is, okay, is this just another one of the crazies? Because there's lots of people who are writing me saying they've solved a code and it turns out to be space aliens or something. So I told my group about this, and then I go back to work. And then later on that evening, I start playing with the system, and I find out, wow, there's something here. I start getting some real readable text out of it. And we track down because we looked at the URL, and we tracked down whose web page it was, and we wrote to the guy, and we said, congratulations. And he said, I got some what looks like plain text, but I don't read Russian. I don't know what it says. That's about as far as I've gotten. And he'd kind of gone through some dictionaries and stuff, but he really wasn't sure what it said. So we're still working on it, and it's like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning at this point, Friday night, Saturday morning, and I'm working on this thing, and I'd gotten to the same point that he had. I had this massive text that I couldn't read. And then I had this, I finally fell asleep, and then I woke up in the morning. I'm still desperately trying to find someone who speaks Russian. And then I have this quandary, which is that it's Saturday, and I had some friends who were moving apartments, and so I had to help, you know, decide, was I going to crack this world-famous code, or was I going to help them carry boxes? And I ended up kind of doing both, so I'm like carrying boxes, and I got a cell phone, and I'm calling people, and then I'm like going out in the front yard and putting down a box and talking to someone. I finally found someone who spoke Russian, which was a friend of a friend of my father, who was an engineer from the ex-Soviet Union. And so with the boxes and the cell phones and everything, and finally, you know, I'd call my dad, and my dad would call his friend, and his friend would call the engineer. And by the end of the day, we had everything moved, and we knew what the code said. And so I put down the last box, and I said, I'm sorry, I have to go write press releases now. And I went back, and I went back home. And this is an example. This is not the actual text, but this is just an example of what we were dealing with. And this is this sentence might be easily understandable to a native English speaker, but someone not familiar with English would have a great deal of trouble reading or translating it. Plus the fact that there isn't any punctuation isn't any help either. So, and this is what the Russian was like. It was all mushed together. There were no word breaks, and there were spelling errors all the way through it as well. So we really needed a native speaker to get in there and figure it out. And we did. Does anyone here speak Russian or read Russian that wants to admit it? Yeah. You're welcome to look at this and verify that that this is what it says. And so here's the various word breaks, and then we got to translate. And I won't read the whole thing, but basically it came out to two different passages of text. And one of them is it looks like an instruction manual to Secret Service agents about how to develop a source. And it says that you want to weave a psychological net around that source so that if you need information, you can pull that net tight. Because if you can control someone psychologically, then you know that you can trust the information that you're getting from them, which is really kind of a chilling passage to have on the sculpture. I love that the last sentence where it says, however, the methods and behavioral techniques that are needed to attain this goal are radically contrary to the ethics and morality of society in the field of interpersonal relations. I'm like, yeah, you think? No. And then the second part of the sculpture was an extract from a memo, which was concerns that the KGB had about the Soviet dissident Sakharov, and concerns that they had that he was going to be speaking at a conference called the Pugwash Conference, and concerns that they had that his comments were going to be used by the Americans for an anti-Soviet agenda. Now, remember when I was talking about I was writing to all these art galleries all over the world, and they were sending me all this information. Back then when I'd done this, and at one point I got this big thick stack of folders, like 4 inches thick, from the Smithsonian, and I was going through these folders from the Smithsonian. About halfway through the folders, I found this document that was all in Russian. And it was a classified KGB memo that was tucked into the Smithsonian folder. And you know, my first thing is like, I think I better let somebody know I have this. And I contacted the FBI and I let them know, and it turned out that around 1990, there had been several people defecting from the Soviet Union to the United States. And some of them, as they'd been defecting, had taken several classified documents with them. And some of those documents had ended up in the Library of Congress. And remember that James Sanborn, his father, worked at the Library of Congress. And so that's how I believe he'd gotten access to some of these documents. And so that's how we know that the Cyrillic projector came out to be extracts of classified KGB documents, because this is the document that I found in that stack of folders from the Smithsonian. And this is, you know, Sakharov is here. And this is part of the text that was on the Cyrillic projector. And here, sekretno, secret. So a classified documents. It was all very cloak and dagger. It was very cool. Okay. So the press releases went out, and all hell broke loose. And an announcement went out on Slashdot, which is a very popular tech website. And my site, I'm very happy. A guy named Hugme is my web admin, and he kept the site running, because my traffic, I tracked my hourly hits. So it would be like 6 hits per hour, 8, 15, 9,037. It was like, bam! and just tens of thousands of hits over the next 24 hours. It was absolutely insane. And then on Slashdot, I don't know if any of you read it, but there's always discussion boards about any particular news story that's on Slashdot. And it's a very kind of high energy, irreverent discussion. And some of them came up with joke solutions of the Cyrillic projector, which I really enjoyed. And my two favorite ones was that what the Cyrillic projector really says is send more vodka. And my other favorite one is they said, what the Cyrillic projector really says is keep information away from moose and squirrel. Okay. So then we had all those typos, so we went back and we looked at our transcripts, and we wanted to verify that our transcripts were accurate, and it looked like the transcripts were accurate. We transcribed what was actually on the sculpture. So the spelling errors that are there, we don't know if they were deliberate, were they hints, were they just somebody screwing up. My inclination is that it was probably just a screw up. I think Sanborn was making many sculptures at this point, and he kind of passed it off to assistants, and I think the assistants kind of got sloppy, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, transcribing Russian is really, really hard. There's letters that, you know, if you have this little curve that goes this way, it's one letter, and a curve that goes this way, it's another letter. Maybe there's a little slash on it, I can see that people would be very, very error prone. So going back to cryptos, this is a picture of me that was taken by an official CIA cryptographer when I was there. And one of the interesting things, and you can't really see it in this picture, but when I was standing here for the picture, the sun was actually up off to my left, so the sun was coming down through the sculpture, and you can see the shadows of the sculpture that were cast. But while I was standing there, what I saw was that along this rock there were letters in light that were kind of projected. I'm saying, so for that, the light would have had to have been over on the other side of the sculpture here. So if the sun was casting a shadow this way, how could there be light on the other side of the sculpture coming through the sculpture and leaving letters of light here? And what I figured out was that the sun was hitting these windows here. And then the reflection from the windows was coming back through the sculpture and projecting these letters in light. And you can see a few of the letters very faintly down here. Now, Sanborn uses a lot of rocks in his sculptures. This white rock is it's a white quartz rock, and it's very unusual for him to use white quartz in his sculptures. So maybe the position of that rock is important. Maybe the way the letters are being projected is important. We don't know. But it was a very interesting phenomenon. And he does like playing with the way that light projects and light and shadow. So getting to the latitude and longitude coordinates. This is an overhead view of CIA headquarters. This is actually one of the ones that I used to actually find the building when I went to Washington, D.C. So this was the original old headquarters building here, and then they commissioned the new headquarters building. This is the cafeteria, the building with the funny-shaped roof. And this courtyard here is the crypto sculpture is right about here in this corner of the courtyard. And here's another close-up. So again, we have the cafeteria here, and this is the new headquarters building here. People walk into the new headquarters building down this passage. There's a bunch of skylights here. If you've seen pictures of the inside, there's like a miniature U2 hanging from the ceiling. That's in this area. And the sculpture is here, and employees in the cafeteria can look. They sit in the cafeteria, and there's a wall of windows here, so they can look out the windows, and they can see the courtyard. There's a duck pond and trees and stuff, and they can see the crypto sculpture. So Sanborn designed the sculpture. He designed this entire green semicircular area. And here, at the entrance to the building, there's some large granite slabs, and Sanborn designed those as well. Now, these slabs, they're about a foot thick, and they've got sheets of copper in them, and the copper has got Morse code messages on the copper. The Morse code messages say things like SOS, lucid memory, T is your position. Now, Sanborn has said that some of these messages are related to part two of the sculpture, the part with, does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. But we don't know exactly how things are related. We know that some of the Morse code messages are, what's that word for when something reads the same backwards? Palindrome. It reads the same forwards and backwards. I mean, SOS is an obvious case. But some of the other ones, if you take it and you read it one way and then you read it backwards, and if you just change the spacing of the dots and dashes, you can get the same message reading back the other way. Some of it might be coincidence, some of it might be deliberate, don't know, but there's a lot of interesting phenomena. And then there's this compass rose, which is also near the Morse code sections. And the compass rose is not aligned to north, and there's a needle on it, which is not aligned to north either. We'd love to get some exact charts that show which way it's oriented and where the needle is pointing, but this is the best picture that we have of it. I have contacted CIA Public Affairs many, many times, begging, groveling for more pictures, and they've said no, no, no. I'm at the point now where I'm starting to work through my congressman and say this artwork was paid for by public money. The public has a right to at least see this artwork. And I have not given up on this, and as you may have heard, I can be a very persistent individual. So at some point, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get more pictures. But if there's anyone here who works at CIA or knows someone who works at CIA, that's one of the things we would most like right now, is just know exactly which direction that compass points. So other methods of solving part three. We knew that cryptos was a keyword for part one and part two, but we never figured out a way that cryptos was a keyword for part three until recently, when David Allen Wilson, who lives in North Carolina, figured out that someone else figured out that the key is 1473625, because if you take this and you number the rows like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, S-L-O-W-L-Y comes off of row 1, row 4, row 7, row 3, row 6, row 2, row 5. So the key was 1473625. And then David Allen Wilson figured out, hey, you know, cryptos is the same as the word 1473625. I'm like, how did you get that? And he said, well, if you take the word cryptos and you alphabetize the letters, K-O-P-R-S-T-Y, and you number them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then when you spell it the correct way again and you put the numbers, it get 1473625. We're like, wow. And so here's a way that cryptos is also a keyword for part three. So if cryptos is a keyword for parts 1, 2, and 3, chances are pretty good it's a keyword for part four, which hasn't helped us yet, but it's one of the angles that we're looking at. Right. The original way that part three was solved was this numeric formula, which is that if you start here and you count the letters 1, 2, 3, 4, and you go to the 192nd letter, S, and then you keep counting 192, you get to an L, and you keep counting 192, and you get to an O, and you keep counting, and you get to a W. And that's another way to just type in this formula to a computer and it'll zip out the entire message that way. That was the first way that it was figured out. And double columnar transposition, but I won't go into all those details. So when we talked to Ed Scheidt about this, he said that he designed some of Kryptos in such a way that it would have multiple keys. So that you could, if you had several different people that you wanted to give keys to, you could give each of them a different key and they'd all be able to solve it, but without knowing the key that you'd given to one of the other individuals. So here we have the out of alignment letters. I've showed some of these slides to Sanborn, and when I showed him this slide about the out of alignment letters, he pointed at them and he said, has anyone figured anything out about these yet? This is important. But we don't know what it means. He's also dropped clues in other recent interviews where he said things like, there's a clue in plain sight that no one has figured out yet. And both he and Scheidt have said that they were surprised that part four has not been solved yet. Though for some of us, some of the cynical members of our group say, it's not solvable, it's all a big hoax. But no, both Sanborn and Scheidt have said it is solvable, and they're surprised that it hasn't been solved. My pet theory as to why it hasn't been solved is that there's some clue on CIA grounds that we need to be there to find out. And until we can go in and measure things and look at things in detail, we won't find it. This is another discovery that came up recently, which is from the Visioneer side, which is the letters that are on each row. These letters should be the same. So where it goes EFGHIJLM, it should go EFGHILLM. And so this row here has an extra L on it. It should end with the J, but instead it ends with the L. This row that this appears on is also the exact same row that the raised letters, the YAR letters, appear on. So it might be something that's specifically designed to draw the eye to that row. When we've counted the characters on each side, the ciphertext side had 869 characters, the tableau had 866, and I thought, okay, that's nice, another piece of trivia. But then when we added in that extra L, then it was 869, 867, that's okay. And then John pointed out, he said, well, what about those two reference spaces? You had the A through Z. If we add those in, all of a sudden we have 869, 869, and it's the exact same number of characters on either side. And it becomes a much more interesting number. And I told you about the spelling errors here, where it's not what they are that's so important as their orientation. And this is another discovery that John made when he went and took a look at the Cyrillic projector. Now, this was a double Visioneer system, and the two words, one was Tien, which is like a T-E-H and a lowercase b, which means darkness, shadow. And the other keyword was Medusa, but spelled with a Cyrillic, which was like an M3DY3A or something. But this word Medusa, it really does kind of jump out when you go and take a look at the projector. It's on the third row from the bottom of this top plate. Well, when John went and looked, he noticed that right next to the third row, there's an extra bolt in the sculpture. And it's not very obvious on this side, but if you look at it from the inside, it's really obvious. There's an extra bolt sticking out, and it's the only extra bolt like that on the entire sculpture. So there's a chance that on the crypto sculpture that there's some little clue like this that we just haven't found because we haven't been able to go up and just take really close looks at it. Sanborn has also commented that when he carved Kryptos, that he carved it by hand. I think the original system was a water jet cutting, but then there's pictures of him using a zigzag power tool. So it's possible that he may have like put in like a little extra burr or kind of a rougher cut on some letters, and that we need to figure out those letters in order to get some sort of a key. Ed Scheidt commented that when we solved the first three parts of the sculpture, that we solved them without recovering the keys first. And Sanborn has kind of said the same thing. When David Stein solved the first three parts, and he gave a talk on it at CIA headquarters, and at the end of the talk, Scheidt went up to Stein and said, congratulations, you solved the first three parts, but not in the way I intended them to be solved. So we know what the keys are now. We know that the keys for part one are Kryptos and Polypsest. Part two is Kryptos and Abscissa. Part three is this transposition system. But where are the we've solved it without recovering the keys first. What does that mean? And even knowing the word abscissa and polypsis, we haven't found them anywhere around the sculpture. So maybe they're hidden in some way that we just haven't figured out yet. Yeah, go on to that. There's other pet theories. This is one of my pet theories, just one slide on a pet theory, which is that the reason maybe that the sculpture is curved is that it's a disassembled cylinder, and you need to put it together. And then there's a very old American cryptographic system designed by Thomas Jefferson, where you have these different wheels, and you can order the wheels in different numerical sequence, and then you line up a ciphertext message, and then you read a plain text message. And it's possible that that's what cryptos is representing, and we just need to figure out how to order the wheels and then how to spin them. It's a system that the Army is using today called M94. And here's another thing about observation about part four is that you have the letters KR, YP, TOS. So you have all the letters of the word cryptos all very close to each other, which might be coincidence, might be significant. It might have something to do what Gary, one of the theories he was working on is he was using the word palimpsest and overlay. Maybe we need to overlay the ciphertext on top of the tableau from the other side, and maybe this KRYP is like showing through from the other side as a palimpsest would. Cryptos has seven letters. When we put part four into these nice seven-letter rows, one thing that's noted is that the doubled letter pairs, there's exactly six doubled letter pairs in the entire section. Five of those six doubled letter pairs are exactly in the same columns. The chances of there being six doubled letter pairs, it's like a chance of one in three. It's not really statistically significant. The chance that they would that five of the six would be lined up like this, that's like one in 1,000. So that starts becoming statistically significant. But whether or not it's going to lead us somewhere, we don't know. Seven letters. So this is a picture of Ed Scheidt, who I met in 2003. I'm going to be meeting him again next month. I'm going to be giving a version of this talk at the NSA Cryptologic History Symposium. And I'll be meeting both him and Sanborn and pumping them for every hint I possibly can. But this recording won't go up on the web too soon, right? Okay. So I told you about how much was carved by ham. We don't know. Something else that one of the members of my group played with, he said, if you took the keywords abscissa and palimpsest and you anagram them, you can get the phrase PS. It's as simple as ABC. Which might be, it might just be something cute, or it might be deliberate. We don't know. Okay, and now another thing is when I met Ed Scheidt, one of the things he kept saying is, when are you going to get back on grounds? When are you going to get back on grounds? And it seemed to me that it was important to him that I get back in to see the sculpture in person at some point. And I told him, well, it's really like difficult to get on site, and I had to do all kinds of official business stuff the first time. He said, well, do what you can, and if you can't, let me know. I thought, okay. So I tried, and I tried to get back in to speak again, and I pulled various strings, and all the strings broke, and I couldn't get on. And so I wrote to Ed. And I said, okay, I've tried everything I can. I can't get on site to CIA. Now, a few hours later, I hadn't heard back from Ed yet, but a few hours after I sent that message, I get this IM that pops up on my screen from a screen name of Molly H. And the IM has one line. It says, the key to cryptos is komitet. And I'm like, that's interesting. And I write back, and they don't reply, but they're still online. You can tell if someone's still logged on. And then a couple minutes later, I said, okay, tell me more. And they'd logged off at that point. Okay. And I kind of reach out through some of my hacker friends. And they say, Molly H., it's a screen name that was just hacked. And someone hacked it, and they sent you that message, and then they deleted it. Okay. And now, komitet, it's a word that jumps out to me. Does anyone else here know what komitet means? I can't speak up. Committee. Yeah. And how is that significant?
It's the first word of KGB.
Exactly. Komitet is the K in KGB. KGB stands for Komitet Gosudarstvenoy Bezopasnosti, the Committee for State Security.
Part of Homeland Security.
Yeah. Sort of their Homeland Security. So was this a hint? I don't know. It might have been coincidence that it just came in that exact same day that I had just written to Ed Scheidt. Most people don't know what komitet means. Also, it's interesting, they said the key to cryptos. They didn't say the key word. They said the key. And that was a word that was used very commonly by Scheidt when I was speaking to him. Also, the Molly H., The head of the CIA's public affairs department is a woman named Molly Hale. Like, if you write a letter to CIA and say, I would like a tour, and they write back and say, no, it's going to be signed Molly Hale, which is probably a false name, but I think it's a false name. So I'm torn. I don't know, but I'm sharing this information because it's possible that because I couldn't get on ground, someone decided to have mercy on me and send me this information saying, well, if she would have gotten on ground, she would have found this. Also, Comitet has 7 letters. That's another intriguing thing, because Kryptos has 7 letters. This is, that document that I found, that I got from the Smithsonian. Here we have Comitet. So, was it a hint or a hoax? Well, no matter whatever we know, what we do know about whoever sent me the IM, number one, they knew I was working on Kryptos, which isn't hard. You go to Google, you type in, Kryptos, my name comes up. Maybe they knew some stuff about the CIA structure. They knew about this Molly Hale person. Maybe they knew some crypto terminology. They knew to say key and not keyword. Maybe they knew some Cold War history. I mean, Comitet is not commonly known. You ask most hackers Comitet, they run to Google, they type it in, they say it's the Finnish word for committee. They don't link that it has anything to do with KGB. And no matter what we know, and it was 7-letter key, and whoever it was, they knew how to cover their tracks. So that much we know. Yeah. So there you have it. Sanborn does have other sculptures. He has over 100 pieces around the world. They're in a variety of different languages. We're working on transcribing as many of them as we can and cracking the codes on all the ones that we have. None of them are as hard as Kryptos. There are some fragments that we haven't solved, but it may just be because they're very small. And he has some stuff in binary. The code systems that he uses are, he repeats. He uses Visionaire. He has used binary. He has used transposition. He has not used any other systems that we found so far.
And the Morse code.
When he does things at universities, they want him to put a sculpture in front of like the economics building. He uses quotes from Adam Smith. So he's got 3 different sculptures that use quotes from Adam Smith. The compass in front of CIA, he's got 2 other sculptures that use compasses that are also in the DC area. And yes, we've tried triangulating to 3 to see if they all point in an interesting direction. One of the compasses is next to a sculpture called Hidden Under the 3 Events, and we've gone and looked at that. Maybe we've got some clues here that'll help with Kryptos, maybe not. Not sure. One of the places that he designed, this is next to the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. There's a restaurant called Zola's Spy Restaurant that Sanborn designed the decor for it. And one of the walls has all these ex-classified documents from in different languages, in English and in French and in Russian. And one of the documents that's here is the same as the source document for the Cyrillic projector. So if he put that document in the restaurant, it's possible one of these documents may also have a clue for the part 4 of Kryptos. I don't know. We're trying to get pictures of all of these. We're trying to transcribe all of these. But again, we go in, we take pictures. The maitre d' shoos us out. The waiters get upset. Why are you taking these pictures? So bit by bit, we're kind of gathering the information. Okay. 10 minutes. And of course, now my computer. You had to say it. You made my computer hang.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. I'll stop that. Okay. So, Kryptos in pop culture, the Da Vinci Code. Dan Brown, who wrote the Da Vinci Code, this is like one of the biggest selling books in the world right now, is a huge fan of Kryptos. And he hid 5 puzzles within the artwork of the book jacket of the Da Vinci Code, which give clues as to the subject of his next novel. 2 of the puzzles that he hid in the book jacket refer to the Kryptos sculpture. So for example, if you look on the back of the book here, very faintly here in this little brown chair area, it says, only WW knows. Also, on the where all the blurbs are on the back of the book, really, really faint light red on dark red, we have the coordinates 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. Now, he changed this in the crypto sculpture. It says 38 degrees, and he put 37 degrees. I've asked him about this, and he says the discrepancy is intentional. Right. Now, some people have said maybe Brown knows the answer to Kryptos. No, Brown does not know the answer to Kryptos. I've talked extensively with Brown. I've like consulted with him when he's like about to go on Good Morning America and they're going to ask him questions about cryptos. He does not know the answer to cryptos, I assure you. Brown and Sanborn had never, ever met either. I actually helped put them together so they could have some conversations recently now that the movie thing is coming out. And Sanborn's kind of looking up and saying, Brown's making a whole lot of money and my sculpture's mentioned on his book. How come I'm not making any money? So there's been a lot of traffic, a lot of news articles that have been popping up recently. Wired.com did a really good article about cryptos in January. Several months later, Wall Street Journal picked it up, and then after Wall Street Journal picked it up, they had it on a password-protected site, and then The Guardian picked it up and it was a public site, and then everywhere in the world. Then NPR got it, and The Hindu, and Taipei Times, and CNN did a segment.
Go back a page.
Yes? Traffic to my website. I've had over 1.2 million page views to my website over the last couple of years. The majority of that is really coming in from the link between the Da Vinci Code and cryptos. People who are fascinated by the book and researching the book as much as they can, and then they run into this reference to cryptos. And so they come researching cryptos because of that. This is another pop culture reference. One of the members of my group, Patrick Foster, got really frustrated. So he made a 3D model of cryptos and imported it into a Half-Life engine just so he could take a crowbar to it and shatter it into 1,000 pieces. Let's see. And I've got... Yeah, we're working on making a more detailed 3D model so we can actually look at like the way light and shadow appears around it. I'm going to play... Do I have 4 minutes, maybe? Okay, yes, okay. All right. I'll play you part of a CNN segment. This showed up like about in mid-June, and it has some information about cryptos and also some interviews with Sanborn. And I particularly want you to pay attention to when Sanborn is asked the question of, do you have to be on grounds to solve the sculpture?
Good way to spend Father's Day. Well, now that we know who Deep Throat was, there's another long-standing Washington mystery needs to be solved. And as David Ensor reports, clues in the best-selling novel The Da Vinci Code have unleashed thousands of amateur code breakers on a sculpture at CIA headquarters.
It is called Kryptos, which is Greek for hidden. On the sculpture at the CIA are several secret messages. 15 years after it was created, just one tantalizing section remains to be decoded. Artist Jim Sanborn created Kryptos.
Does anybody know, besides you, what that says?
Not really.
Nobody?
I don't think so.
Since the CIA would not let us meet him at its site, Sanborn showed us the unsolved secret section on a sister sculpture of his at Washington's Hirshhorn Museum.
Right. Those last characters begin right here with this question mark. Mm-hmm. Go with these three characters.
OBK.
That's right. This line. And then this line, and then ends with C-A-R right here.
Code crackers, professional and amateur, are obsessing over solving the mystery since Dan Brown's bestseller, The Da Vinci Code, featured Kryptos references on its cover. His publisher's website heightens the intrigue. Disguised on the jacket of The Da Vinci Code, it says, numerous encrypted messages hint at the subject matter of Dan Brown's next novel.
There's a woman named Ilonka Dunin who has a website on the crypto sculpture. And before Da Vinci Code, she was getting like 50 hits a day on the website. And now she's getting thousands, basically. So it's pretty stunning change.
How did you, a novice, come up with a code that nobody's been able to break today?
Listen, I'll tell you, codes, I mean, we all have codes. I mean, what's your ATM PIN number?
I'm not going to tell you.
Thank you. And so, you know, I mean, we all have our codes. And so this was one that I did. And I don't think it's unusual to design a code that's difficult to crack. I don't think it's hard either, really.
Could somebody decipher this last clue from this sculpture at the Hirshhorn, or would they need to know things that are only on the CIA piece of work?
You still haven't given me that ATM code yet. This piece does give you pretty much everything that's on the CIA sculpture.
One of the sections of Kryptos that has already been decoded was a quote from the description by an archaeologist of the moment when he discovered the tomb of the ancient Egyptian pharaoh, Tutankhamun.
With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. I don't presume to think that crypto sculpture has the import that finding Tutankhamun's tomb would have, but it's the same magic of finding something. So I just wanted to somehow demonstrate that magic.
Jim Sanborn's Kryptos, 15 years, and still a mystery. David Ensor, CNN Washington.
Okay, so summary. Kryptos has four sections of code. Three of the four have been solved. Fourth is one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. There's an untitled Kryptos piece. He actually made two of them. One of them is at the home of a private collector in California. The other one, slightly larger, 20% larger, is at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. Has two sides. One side has text from the CIA version of the sculpture. One side is encrypted Russian text. We cracked the Russian side of it. Both Jim Sanborn and Ed Scheidt said Kryptos was designed to be solved, that it is solvable. When I flat out asked Sanborn, is part four solvable, he said, yes, it ain't easy, but it's solvable. Anybody that wants to help our group, we especially need linguists so we can transcribe all the sculptures that are in other strange languages, and 3D modelers. We're definitely looking for people. This is the furthest we've gotten along. There's a guy named Jay in St. Louis using, and we have the 3D Studio Max files of this. So if anyone wants to take this and run with it, we can give you the files that you can import into your own 3D modeling program, and you can add other details. If you want more information, we have a Yahoo group. If you want to join the group, send an email to kryptos-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Or if you forget that, just go to Google and type in Kryptos, or just go to Google and type in Ilanka, or I am me. My screen name is Ilanka. Pretty easy to find. And don't have a whole lot of time, but any questions? Here.
Given that he chose to punch these letters so that they're, you know, they're holes in the sculpture, and instead of engraving into stone or something, and that he made that allusion to light and shadow, is there any chance that some of the deliberate mistakes and so forth, that there's information contained in the negative space between the letters?
What you're referring to is what we call the kerning theory about where the letters are, and some people who have like some print set experience are actually tracing, you know, tracking that particular system down and looking at how some of the letters seem to be further apart than they should be. It's not a standardized font. So yes, it's possible. Anything's possible. But as for whether, I couldn't tell you for sure.
Have you considered that there's a possible connection between the anagram for abscissa and palmoset and the, I'm sending this anonymous because I have a sense of humor?
Is there a connection between the anagram between abscissa and palimpsest and the anonymous solver? I don't think so. The anonymous solver is a guy living in North Carolina. I know who he is, and I've talked with him. And he's very media shy, and he's said many, many times that he does not want to be on our discussion group because he believes that he's going to solve part four of Kryptos, and he wants to be adamantly sure that he can say he solved it without help. So he doesn't discuss anything with us. Okay, and that's it. Thank you all very much for coming.